information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. This is Up North News Radio. Here's Pat Kreitlow.
Welcome back to this Monday morning edition, May the 1st of Up North News Radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow in Chippewa Falls. Coming up this hour, the 1849 abortion ban lawsuit gets going this week, and attorney Diane Welsh from the Pinesbach Law Firm will help explain some of the X's and O's of the lawsuit that's going to be argued in a county courtroom this week, but will eventually almost assuredly make its way to the state Supreme Court, which is what made last month's election so vitally important. Also, Terry Bell with Three Things to Know to start the week. He'll have that, the civic media news director. Tomorrow, we'll have Lincoln County dairy farmer Hans Breitenmoser joining us. We'll be talking in part about the shared revenue impact on rural Wisconsin, but joining us now to do the same thing, talk about the shared revenue program, somebody who's even, shall we say, more of an insider on this business because he's a member of the legislature, State Senator Jeff Smith from the Eau Claire area, the town of Brunswick, where he was town chair. So he knows a thing or two about how the legislature is supposed to be looking out for local governments. Jeff, how are you?
Hey, how are you doing, Pat? Happy International Workers' Day.
There you go. And it last Friday was Workers' Memorial Day, marking those who've been killed on the job, and now people fighting for their rights to be treated with dignity on the job on this May the 1st. So I think dignity, maybe that's the word I should latch onto here, is that local units of government for decades have relied on the legislature to have the dignity to, treat them as a valued partner in taking care of their constituents, providing a certain level of services, and sharing some state tax revenue to do that, because obviously the state collects much more from a much broader base. And yet Republicans have continued to make changes to shared revenue that haven't really done any favors for the local levels of government. You were town chair for 6 years. During your time in the legislature, on and off over the past dozen years or so, how would you best describe when you tell people what the Republican majority has done to shared revenue and the whole relationship with local units of government?
Well, I think the relationship is even most important to talk about because it has been it's worse than just an erosion of local control. It has been gobbling up any opportunity for local control. And this idea that they are touting, which we don't even know what it is. I don't know if anybody realizes that, but there's not a plan. There is not a bill been circulated. I'm frustrated with the press that covers them and doesn't ask those questions. Well, where's the bill and what's in it? So we don't know what's in it. And yet they seem to do this a lot. And back to the local control erosion. And this, what we do know is that they are attaching all sorts of strings to their plan, suggesting that if local municipalities want that money, they got to follow the Republicans' rules, which would include things like we've heard, I saw in the press anyway, things like restricting public health officials from doing their job and some other things. So it's all about local control that they don't really believe in.
No, they said they were all about local control. They said they were against big government. So put us into power and that's what we'll do. And of course, once they now have power at the state level, which is cemented in by gerrymandering, suddenly it's all about absolute power on their behalf. And again, the thing about, strings attached, it's one thing to put in, limits or tie strings that might say, make sure that you, pay a minimum wage or, don't pollute or things like that. Don't rip off your customers. But in this case, I mean, it's getting down to the micro level of, we at the state government will tell you what you can and can't spend your money on, which goes completely against the notion of local control in the first place. You're basically treating the local officials as puppets at best.
Yeah, this I find not only childish but almost comical. But one of them that we know for sure they're attaching to this is that they are saying Milwaukee, the city of Milwaukee, would not be able to use their shared revenue for their trolley car.
I never understood that.
Do you understand that?
No, I laughed about this on Friday, and I'm going to laugh about it again now, that their fixation, they're so triggered by any kind of a train. When you and I served in the legislature together and we were that close to getting a high-speed passenger rail plan put through, and they were so against that. And I recall, you know, I'm not going to name names, but I'll never forget somebody prominent in Eau Claire who just said it out loud to me in a private conversation, but said, well, we don't want the rail to the Twin Cities. We don't want to, you know, risk raising our crime rate and bringing in, you know, people. And I thought that was just one of the ugliest things I'd ever heard. Oh. But they're so against rail. They're so against streetcars, you know, for helping people from the suburbs get to cities, because people from the cities might go to the suburbs. And it's just an amazing fixation that they have on this. Senator Jeff Smith is with us. We're going to pause for a break here. We're going to get the latest from weatherology and find out why the heck there's a couple of inches of snow in Green Bay and other parts of eastern Wisconsin coming up in just a moment here. And then Senator Smith will join us again to talk about, again, what Republicans are saying they're going to change about shared revenue. They said it in a press conference, but they didn't actually release a plan. There still isn't a plan to be voted on or to be reviewed. And that seems to be their mode of operations. We'll talk more about that with Senator Smith in just a bit. You're up north. Welcome back with Senator Jeff Smith in just a bit. First, some sports and weather. The Brewers lost to the LA Angels on Sunday 3-0, but the Brewers did take 2 out of 3 in that series after winning on Friday and Saturday. They are off today. They travel to Colorado to play the Rockies starting tomorrow for 3 games, and then 3 more games in San Francisco to play the Giants next weekend. Again, you can hear the Brewers on Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3 FM, 1100 AM, and on WRCE News from the Center and Richland Center, 107.7 FM and 1450 AM. Meanwhile, the Packers have stocked up on targets for Jordan Love. We did mention that in the first round, they took a pass rusher, but then since then, they chose three different tight ends, three different receivers, a kicker, just a whole passel of new names to learn as a new era begins for the green and gold. Jennifer Vachitsky is now here from Weatherology and tells us what's going on. And Jennifer, we were talking to somebody in Green Bay a little bit ago saying that it's at least an inch of snow that has fallen over there. And I know there was a lot of talk about light snow falling across eastern Wisconsin on May 1st. Maybe, I know you're not allowed to say this, but maybe, this is the last time there's snow on the ground before we're done. Maybe
seems like a good word there. Maybe. I'll okay, go with maybe.
All right. Sounds good. What's the picture look like to start the week?
Yeah, I mean, you're great. Make a good point. It's actually an interesting to start to the month here, all across the board with different things happening, depending on where you're at. The east central to northeastern and north central parts of the state are looking at winter weather advisories and winter storm warnings. Oshkosh looking at a winter weather advisory till about 10 a.m. with a mix of rain and snow in the morning hours and becoming all rain in the afternoon. And that area, not really looking at any snow accumulations, but the little bit farther north you go, you'll encounter 1 to 5 inches of snowfall possible during the day, some areas potentially getting 8 to 10 inches in the north central parts of the state where they're looking at those winter storm warnings. So a very interesting start to May here for today. For the rest of us, a chance for some rain and snow mixing in the morning from Wausau down to Madison and over to Milwaukee, then becoming all rain chances in the afternoon hours. Rain chances for the western parts of the state, Richland Center over to Amory and Baldwin. Overall below averages, nearly the whole state should be in the mid to lower 60s. Looking at 40s for most as that cold front came through, but around 50 expected in the west, so those are going to be our warmest parts for today. Dry across the board tomorrow with cloud cover for most. Sunny skies, though, for those western parts of the state, they're looking at warmer temperatures today. Temperature-wise, though, slightly warmer for most tomorrow, lingering in the mid to lower 40s, then mid-50s in that Amory, Baldwin, and Richland Center area as that warm front starts to push through the western parts of the state tomorrow. And then even warmer and dry for everyone on Wednesday, mid to upper 50s, around 60 degrees. So getting closer to average with sunny skies across the board, a little bit more cloud cover around the Lake Michigan lakefront, and then even warmer overall for the second half of the work week. So something to look forward to.
If there were a transcript of what she just said, you would take that yellow highlighter and just circle it around the words warm front. It's warming our hearts on a day like this, Jennifer. Thanks so much. Have a great Monday.
You too.
All right. Jennifer Fuchitsky from Weatherology. Let's bring in State Senator Jeff Smith once again, as we're talking about the Republican legislators saying that they're going to tweak shared revenue. Let's back up for a second on why this is. The state has a record $7 billion surplus. Republicans have been sitting on it for over a year rather than putting it to work. And so Governor Evers and Democrats have been saying, okay, let's work on some of the things that we haven't been able to do. Times have been tough. There was the pandemic recession. Frankly, other places are still recovering from past, you know, budget slashing. There's been some great opportunities to put this surplus to work, Jeff. And this new shared revenue plan is, I think they're using the surplus as a guise to say, oh yeah, here's our reform plan, but they could have come up with this without a surplus. It doesn't really put any of that to work for people, does it?
No, and it has nothing to do with the surplus. But let's start with Governor Evers' shared revenue plan, which is what started them off, because they really were unhappy that they didn't come up with the idea, or that, you know, that these strings weren't attached to his plan. So with Governor Evers' plan, we'd be using 20% of sales tax collections, which is the same thing the Republicans are also suggesting. That means $576.2 million in new aid. 43% of that funding would be dedicated to police, fire, and emergency responders. Who really backs the blue?
Right.
56% of the funding will go to local governments as general aid. Of that 56%, 70% goes to towns, villages, and cities, and 30% goes to counties. You know, it's not just the governor throwing money into a flawed formula. He addresses the root cause for keeping our local governments funded and lets them make decisions, which they're elected to do.
So, and Governor Evers, again, to his credit, and we talked about this on Friday, using 20% of sales tax revenue is a mechanism for doing that, as opposed to whether you use all of state general resources and then you allocate a share of that. I mean, at least this way, local governments know what to expect. Jeff, as a longtime town chair in the town of Brunswick there in Eau Claire County, again, you know, you've got the big city of Eau Claire not far from you, so you know the difference of their tax base compared to the tax base of a rural township. Just from a general standpoint, from a town standpoint, talk about the importance of having state government as a positive partner, not a sugar daddy, but a positive partner.
Well, that's a wouldn't it be nice if that were the case? But they are. I would say this about the Republicans in this particular plan: they are using the towns. The towns actually benefit from most of this, and they kind of ignore the towns for the most part, but they're making sure that they get their share of the money, so they have nothing to complain about. So they're kind of using that as a backdrop for them and background, so the towns are happy. But let's just, how about, I don't know if you've heard this quote from Paul Farrell, former Republican state senator and Waukesha County executive. He said, "The new money provided under the proposal falls far short of what a low-tax county like Waukesha needs to fight crime, support our 911 dispatchers, and keep our roads and the public safe. In fact, if unchanged, the new spending proposal would barely cover the cost of inflation in 1 year for their county budget. Making matters worse, the plan attaches just enough strings to tie our hands and prevent us from using the funds in the best way possible." This, Paul Farrell's not some left-wing Democrat out there.
No, he's a former Republican State Party chair, if memory serves correctly. He knows what he's talking about on this, and he recognizes what this is. This is a political document that says if we do just enough to take care of our friends in rural counties, if we take care of the towns, if we at least just maybe hit the rate of inflation with our allies, but then we really stick it to Milwaukee and some of the other cities, we come out ahead because we just spend our time, you know, smearing the cities, and people in the rural areas say, yeah, at least you're holding us harmless. And here's you and Paul Farrow and others saying, no, we're actually not getting nearly enough out of this from a legislature that should otherwise be supportive of local services.
Well, and on top of this, they're pulling Milwaukee and county and city out of the shared revenue plan, and separately telling them that if they want their money, they have to go to referendum. They just love doing that to local units of government, don't they?
Yeah, they love making, because then they're the good guys. They make the local officials look like the bad guys who have to go to the taxpayer and ask for more help because the state is stiffing them.
Yeah, and so people may not know this, and I tell them that we have met on the floor 3 times in over 4 months now. And in those 3 session days, we've had very few bills. It's been about appointments, and which is, you know, one step in the right direction. So we should be accepting a badge of care expansion. They really want to do something, do that. Marijuana legalization. We could, with this surplus, we could finally fix the public education funding formula. And because Republicans, and I just heard it again yesterday, a quote from a Republican saying the same thing over and over, that, oh, we can't fix it because we'd have to lower the high spending districts to get to the lower spending districts, and that's a bunch of baloney. But either way, we have the funding to do that now. We could raise the low funding districts to the high spending districts and then go from there. Again, they don't address the dark store loophole. And you know, finally, Pat, I don't know about you, but I've been so upset for a few weeks here since Easter when we had 2 police officers murdered in Cameron, small town. It really affects a small town even more. And when the Republicans are silent on that sort of thing, and we could have prevented that, the families of those of that shooter said that in the report that he had told them if he was pulled over by police, he was going to shoot him. And he had 2 guns in his car. If the Republicans were serious about backing the blue and getting things done and doing the right thing for our communities, they would pass emergency response protection orders so that families like that could prevent such terrible tragedies from happening. So, and of course, there's redistricting reform. There's so many good things we could be doing. And what are we playing these political games and tying the hands of local officials?
And on top of that, the thing that is especially hypocritical is that the Republicans are about to, as part of the Joint Finance Committee, writing a state budget, they're taking Governor Evers' proposal, and what they say every time is, we're stripping out all of the policy because that doesn't belong in a budget. A budget should just be about, you know, the numbers. But look at this shared revenue proposal. It's full of policy. You know, tying the hands of local units of government. It's again, saying one thing and doing the other, when the fact of the matter is, you know, you actually do need both policy and the numbers in order to have an effective state government. But that's, you know, again, it only seems to happen when it's convenient for them.
Yeah, and they are planning on scrapping the governor's budget as of tomorrow. Tomorrow they're going to be voting on that.
And so what it is that the governor has put forward a budget. So it's I'd love when some of your colleagues have done the side-by-side where they put a stack of papers that's pretty thick and saying, this is Governor Evers' budget proposal and we're going to trim it down. And then they show this little tiny stack of papers, you know, which is the baseline budget. We're going to cut all that down to here as if to infer their slashing government. But as I've said multiple times, all that tells me is they're not willing to do the work. What I'm seeing from Governor Evers is work. We have problems. Let's get the problem solved. And they're saying, nope, we don't have any interest in that.
Yeah. And you know, you've been through this before. We have a lot of people that come through the office every day telling us their story and why they need the state support of what they do, the good things that they do. And that's what's in that larger package, that it is actually taking care of the things that state government is supposed to do.
You're taking care of business over there. I see you there in your overalls on your hobby farm. So I have to let you go. But what's the first chore you're doing when we hang up here? What's next?
Well, I just came in from the barn, so now I get to go eat breakfast.
Okay. When did chores start?
Six.
Oh, slacker. Okay, that's fine. You know, some of us are starting a radio show at that point. good to see you, buddy. Thank you so much. All right. Have a great day.
Thank you, Pat.
State Senator Jeff Smith joining us from the town of Brunswick in Eau Claire County. Coming up next, Attorney Diane Welsh is going to join us, and we're going to be talking about the legal arguments that start this week in the lawsuit hoping to strike down Wisconsin's 1849 abortion ban. That's coming up next. You're up north.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
All right, Up North News does not have a book club, but if we did, there would be two books going on right now, and I happen to hear from both authors of my most recent reads, and so I want to mention their books again. On Saturday, Ruth Conniff, the author of the book Milked, spoke to a group in Rice Lake. This, again, is an amazing book about all of the many Mexican immigrants who work on Wisconsin's dairy farms and the farmers who support them and want to finally see a solution to America's long-running immigration problem. And on Sunday, we talked to John Kinville, who wrote the book about Harry Kramer, the first Wisconsin casualty of World War II at Pearl Harbor. And again, we had a full house at the Heide Center, including some of the relatives of Harry Kramer, and talking about the way that John essentially brought this young man back. You know, he'd been long forgotten, never married, never had kids. We didn't know what his life was like, but thanks to letters that he sent to friends and to his parents, we learned more about John Kinville. We had him here on the radio. Highly recommend those books. So I wanted to mention seeing both of those authors over the weekend. We are joined now not only by Dr. Lyerly, but also Diane Welsh, an attorney with Pinesbach, about the lawsuit that is finally getting going this week in Dane County Circuit Court about the state's 1849 abortion ban. Diane, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
We talked a little bit with Dr. Lyerly in the last hour about the abortion ban, and we want to learn as much as we can about what exactly are the arguments that are going to be made in this case, not just by Attorney General Josh Call, but by the interveners in this case. But before we can get to the arguments, we do kind of need to set up the playing field. So we know that Josh Call is suing because of the that ban should be overturned. He originally was suing Republican legislators, but is now suing district attorneys. And then these physicians are in there as interveners. Can you kind of explain how that all works?
I can. What interveners are is they didn't originally bring the lawsuit, but they see that there's a lawsuit happening and say, we care about this very same thing. So instead of bringing a separate lawsuit where we raise very similar issues, we are going to make a motion to join that lawsuit. So this is for, you know, the efficiency of the courts, and the issue is like, so on behalf of physicians who care about this topic, we can join Josh Call, the head of the medical examining board, the head of the Department of Safety and Professional Services, to say that this law, this old historic law from the 19th century, it should no longer be viewed as the current law because of so many other laws that have been acted since then. So that's what we are as interveners. The judge granted our motion, which means we are now like an equal party, a plaintiff in this case, but we're called a plaintiff intervener instead of just the plaintiffs that Josh Call and the others who we brought the lawsuit on behalf of are called.
So does that mean that you actually make arguments on behalf of the interveners as opposed to simply filing a brief?
Exactly. So part of our argument is, you know, us too, we agree with what Josh Call's arguing. The other argument that we advanced that was not in the Attorney General's brief is called a due process claim. Right now, it's very confusing for doctors, and no one should be criminally prosecuted when the law is very confusing. We have a right, a due process right, to know what the criminal laws are and what we might be prosecuted for violating. So on behalf of our physicians, we've raised this claim saying, the state of the law is a mess. The legislature refused to reconvene and make a modern abortion law after the Dobbs decision was released. And so now we have all of these, you know, a dozen or so new abortion laws that they've been following for the last 50 years. And all of the sudden we have Republican prosecutors and, you know, a former AG candidate saying that old ban is in force. So we have health systems that are confused about what could or should be done. We have physicians who, you know, risk being picked up by a local sheriff or investigated or having criminal charges filed if they comply with all the modern laws, but some local elected sheriff or district attorney thinks that the old ban should be enforced or can be enforced. So that's the claim that we've brought on behalf of physicians that wasn't otherwise in the lawsuit.
Dr. Lyerly, can you confirm as a physician and intervener that there is confusion about what the law says and what your legal status would be in caring for your patients?
There is confusion about what the law says and what the legal status would be, especially in places like Sheboygan, where the DA has specifically said that he will prosecute. That's where I was practicing. So I personally feel very threatened because I don't think that the DA truly understands how abortion care is intertwined with every part of women's health care. So would he prosecute someone who was being treated for an ectopic pregnancy, which is truly a life-threatening condition? It is the number one reason why women die in early pregnancy. I know what to do. I know how to save someone's life. But if there's cardiac activity with that pregnancy, would he consider that an abortion? So yes, we feel threatened. These are common conditions, managing miscarriages, helping people with fertility issues. We feel threatened and we're very concerned, not only for our well-being right now and our ability to practice right now, but for what happens down the road in the state where we already don't have enough doctors to care for the people who live here.
Diane, I've wondered this out loud several times, and now I get to do it with a real live actual attorney and not the doctors and radio talk show hosts who are pretending to be attorneys. And it's this, that there was a bill passed into law in the mid-1980s, I believe, that, again, protected abortion rights up to the point of viability. I get that that's going to be part of the argument. I still don't understand. Why isn't that the law right now? When the Dobbs decision came out, how is it not that the law from the mid-80s is what Wisconsin is governed under? I mean, who made that determination and why?
So in my legal opinion, that is the law right now, as well as a host of other laws that the legislature passed in the 90s and later, you know, about reporting and information and other things. So, you know, Pat, you've nailed our argument that in the 1980s, there was a Ledge Council study, a comprehensive act that was passed to deal with both like abortion and children and support for those. It was, you know, it wasn't a decision that said Roe was overturned years and years ago. Now we're putting something together. It was a comprehensive abortion act that dealt very specifically with the subject. And again, in my legal opinion, I think that is the law that's enforced today. But has Kristen mentioned, there are, you know, the Sheboygan DA is saying, no, that old ban is enforced. There are conservative commentators who have written white papers and online blogs saying that old ban is enforced. You know, we have prosecutors say we get to enact, you know, just prosecutorial discretion. And we're saying, no, that old ban has been replaced by this 1985 law, and you don't get to resurrect the old ban. And has the Attorney General has said, like, it's been in disuse for at least 5 decades. That's totally unfair to both doctors and patients who may need an abortion, you know, whose life or health or, you know, depend on that type of health care, or who want to choose an abortion, you know, as the more modern law permits up to viability. So that is the argument we're making, Pat. So the whatever physicians and radio talk show hosts you've been talking to, like, understand the law like I do.
Well, here's the thing then, because and this is much less for you, but for again, the radio talk show hosts, the journalists, we've talked about the legal arguments. We've talked about the impact on women and the impact on physicians and caregivers. But it seems from that response, the light bulb moment I'm getting is that reporters and media folks have been jumping to that assumption. They've been saying Wisconsin's now ruled by an 1849 ban. No, nobody declared that. That there's actually, what we all should have been saying all this time is there's now uncertainty about which law rules the roost, but because some DA might claim it's the 1849 ban, that's why physicians, you know, face getting arrested. But I know that takes more words to say, but I think by us all rushing to declare the 1849 ban as law, we now have people assuming a condition that isn't exactly so. And then that's what you're asking a court to nail down for us, right?
That's exactly right, Pat. And you don't know how many reporters and other attorneys and physicians, you know, I've made that distinction to. And the reason that we need to be cautious is both because there are, you know, elected DAs who think it's enforceable now, and that felony has a 6-year statute of limitations. So there could be a change in elected district attorney in any county who could look back 6 years from, you know, going into the future, could look back to what happens today and make a different decision. So that's why we need clarity. And if the legislature isn't going to provide that clarity, we need the courts to provide that clarity.
But now, remember, Kristen, I'm sorry, go ahead, Diane.
No. And Kristen, I think, will confirm that that's a really important distinction that I'm glad that you're making, you know, that it's because it might be prosecuted, not because anyone has said that old ban has sprung back to life, which we don't think it has.
Yeah, because it comes back to what a lot of folks were happy to hear Governor Tony Evers last year say, that, you know, he would grant clemency or pardons to anybody prosecuted under the law. And that made people, you know, very encouraged for a bit. But then folks kind of reminded them, wait, there's this statute of limitations, Kristen, that doesn't exactly give you a sense of security.
I think it's great that he has voiced his support and willingness to do what he can do. But the truth of the matter is that's something that happens way down at the end of the line. And what we're trying to avoid is any sort of prosecution up front. We just want to keep practicing medicine. We just want to keep taking care of our patients. And we recognize that this is a hostile environment, and we're concerned about the potential for criminal charges for literally just doing the right things for our patients. So that's what's tricky about it. And Josh Call also has been very supportive. I mean, clearly, this is his lawsuit, but there's only so much that they can do. We really need the legislature to just drop this, to be very clear. We need the DAs to say, we are not going to enforce this ban, so that we can go about taking care of the people of Wisconsin.
And Diane, this is not about relitigating Dobbs or Roe v. Wade. Obviously, there's an argument to be made to codifying abortion rights in federal law. But what you're doing here is saying, okay, fine, Dobbs says that there can be up to 50 different state rules. It's just that Wisconsin's rule needs to be clarified, and the legislature seems to have no interest in doing it. So you're asking the court to at least say, if there's going to be this checkerboard of women's rights, could we get a clear definition on what women's and physicians' rights are in Wisconsin?
Exactly. And let's believe that the more modern legislatures, some that actually included women, but the laws that were passed in the 21st century or in 1985 or the 1990s, that those are the abortion laws that should be enforced, not something from the 19th century that hasn't been, you know, enforced in half a decade and really uses arcane terms and is wholly unprotective of patients.
I've got 1 minute remaining, so let me ask, let's talk process for a sec. Arguments will be made in Dane County Court this coming Thursday. What are the next, you know, one or two or three steps after that? Not necessarily a date, but what would happen after those arguments are made?
So this is District Attorney Ermansky's motion to dismiss the lawsuit, just saying, like, throw the whole thing out. This isn't an argument that this court should hear. Hopefully we'll survive. And so we'll be waiting for the District Dane County judge to issue a ruling on the motion to dismiss. Then we will be briefing a summary judgment motion. So we'll make legal arguments, why our arguments should win, and why the old ban should be deemed to be unenforceable. That's the circuit court ruling. It would have statewide impact because it's a declaratory judgment. There's the potential that anyone who doesn't win in circuit court could appeal to the Wisconsin Court of Appeals and eventually the Wisconsin Supreme Court, which would be discretionary review. But hopefully before that happens, we will have restored abortion rights in Wisconsin.
And it's because of that potential to go to the state Supreme Court that had so many people talking about this lawsuit for that last campaign. Diane Welsh, thank you so much. We learned so much. I appreciate it greatly. And we really are thankful for your time.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
All right. Kristen, thank you so much, too. And we'll talk to you Thursday for Hometown Health.
Sounds great.
All right. Everybody have a great day. When we come back, Civic Media News Director Terry Bell will be here with three things that you should know to start the week as we wrap up our conversation here for Monday, the first day of May, here on Up North News Radio. It's about damn time. Joined in just a second by Civic Media News Director Terry Bell with three things to know to start the week. Spoiler alert, the first thing to know watching news for this week is about the lawsuit about the 1849 abortion ban. And Kristen's sticking around because actually there's the arguments are on Thursday, but then there's something special that you're doing with Kristen Bry. And there's another Kristen involved on it's a week of Kristens, especially on Thursday.
Three Kristens you need to know on Thursday. That's a great transition, Pat.
There you go.
So we're going to talk to Kristen Elfheim on Thursday morning at 7:30 for Hometown Health. And we're going to talk about financial health. You often don't think of financial stuff being part of your health, but it absolutely is. And then at noon, Kristen, Brian, and I are kicking off a series to celebrate May is Women's Health Month. Hey, let's celebrate women's health. So we're going to real talk about women's health. And I think we're going to focus on pregnancy on Thursday.
It would seem the thing an OBGYN would be to talk about pregnancy. I mean, if you're talking about tonsillectomies, I'd worry. So
one of the many things
way to stay in your lane.
OBGYNs do.
Yes,
yeah, right.
All right. So a lot happening Thursday.
Pat.
So, yep. Thanks for that reminder. See you later.
You bet. See
ya. All right, Terry, I've done your spoiler alert for thing number one. Did you have a good weekend?
Of course. I had a delightful weekend. How was yours?
Well, let's see. The Saturday was nice. Got to see some friends up in Rice Lake at the 7th Congressional District Convention. We heard from Kyle Kilborn, who is the first declared candidate to who wants to challenge Congressman Tom Tiffany. And yeah, just, you know, it was the first real gathering, you know, post COVID. And you could tell that people liked to be able to talk about the election just passed. And of course, the things that are just ahead of us. And that, of course, would be, you know, the abortion lawsuit that it's finally getting going this week.
Thursday in a Dane County Circuit Courtroom in Madison. Yes, everything. There's been a lot of anticipation about this, especially since Roe was overturned last year. And this will be Josh Call's opening salvo in the challenge to Wisconsin's 1849 abortion law. Essentially, what the Attorney General is going to argue is that laws passed since 1849, particularly in the last 10 to 20 years or so, they pretty much make that 1849 ban moot, null and void, whatever the proper term is, and that at the very least we would have restrictions on abortion, but not outright bans. I think abortion would be legal up to the first 20 weeks of pregnancy, if I'm not mistaken. So that is that's what we can expect to happen on Thursday.
It was kind of an eye-opener for me, just talking to Diane Welsh in our last segment about that really all of us in the media have drawn this, we've made this assumption that, you know, Wisconsin's now ruled by an 1849 ban, but in fact, there is a lack of legal clarity, shall we say. So, I mean, on the one hand, it doesn't matter because there are no abortion services in Wisconsin because of concern that the 1849 ban is the law that's actually in play. But from a legal standpoint, what this suit is about is that there's actual legal confusion about what's at play. And we all need to get some clarity on that, if not from the Dane County Court, then perhaps all the way to the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
Well, and that's the whole point. I think this is just kicking off a series of events which will likely take us to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. As we all remember from the campaign between Janet Protasiewicz and Dan Kelly, how important that last vote would be to the issue one way or the other. So, yes, that's the ultimate end game.
Now, the legislature on item number two here continues its work crafting a new state budget, and State Senator Jeff Smith joined us earlier to remind us that Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee are going to scrap pretty much all of Governor Tony Evers' proposals and do their own thing. That they're also, the Republicans, saying that they're going to come up with some kind of a new shared revenue proposal for the state to help local governments of local units of government provide services. But they're much like the abortion law. There seems to be a real lack of clarity about what it is Republicans would really want to do when this whole budget debate is said and done.
What we're fairly certain about the shared revenue plan anyway is that instead of the current way it's funded, it would take 20% of the state sales tax and disperse that throughout Wisconsin. And for most, if not all, communities, that would amount to a 10% increase from what they're getting now. And that would appear to be a benefit to many communities who have been struggling to keep up with their costs of doing business. It's expensive to run a local government, even a very small one. So local governments are happy about that. There's more money in it for certain communities, for doing things a certain way, especially when it comes to law enforcement and sharing resources and collaborating and doing that sort of thing, finding some efficiencies when governments can share some costs and operations. So there will be some carrots and strings. And then there's also the matter of this referendum that voters in Milwaukee and Milwaukee County could vote on and pass if they want to see their taxes raised even higher in order to help get them through some choppy budget waters.
Yeah, once again, much like with school districts, you know, making the local unit of government into the bad guys and say, hey, please raise our taxes. And then the third thing to note is that we are getting closer to the official ending of the coronavirus emergency. And, you know, that has certain, tangible impacts on people.
Certainly does. One thing is that free at-home COVID-19 tests, those are going away. What will happen now from this point forward, vaccination tests probably vary more from community to community than they do now. But certainly the access that many places like I live in Madison, and they were very easy to get and very abundant. That may change going forward. If you use telehealth, that is, to get a Paxlovid, if you've been recently diagnosed with COVID, that will keep going at least through the end of the year. But one thing that really does affect a lot of people during the lockdown or shutdown or whatever you want to call it, Badger Care Plus enrollment, re-enrollment was automatic. Now that the emergency is over, we go back to Badger Care participants having to re-enroll every time that their participation is about to expire.
You mentioned Madison, you're there. It looks to me like you're in the new studios, not the old one.
I'm all backlit and low angle and looking really good. But yeah, the
I didn't say the studio was finished yet, but you're at least there, right?
I am there. So the transition is slowly happening. Our production facilities, production studios operations have moved to our new headquarters downtown.
Nice.
Our on-air broadcast studio is still at the old place, but that should change at some point in May, we expect.
All right. Looking forward to it. Yeah. Terry, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Have a great day. Again, you can follow me on Facebook, Pat Kreitlow Up North, and you have a very good Monday. We'll see you come Tuesday.